Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get 2 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store or Lowe's.com for more details.
L-E-T-E-N-E-T. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 100% match on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
I'm Taylor Payne, this is Pod on the Tyne, and it's lovely to be back in your eyes and ears, of course. I'm joined on this episode by George Corkin and Chris Wharf. George, how are you?
I'm good, yes, I'm good. I'm fresh from 4 games. Well, I say fresh. No, what's the opposite of fresh?
Not
stale.
Fresh.
I'm stale from doing 4 games in 4 days at the start of the season, and in fact that is now 5 games in 6 days. Seven days, because I was at Arsenal, I was at Hull, I was at Newcastle, I was at Fulham, I was then at Newcastle again for last night's League Cup game. So I'm running on fumes. I'm ready for the season to end. Let's go. Let's do this. By the way, that was the first 4 days. That was for a piece in The Athletic, new series which I'm calling I'm not calling it. It's been called Our League. Something a bit new I'm doing this season. I would love people to have a read. I'm trying to bring the sights and sounds and smells of the Premier League to people. I've linked it in my social media stuff, so please have a read. You can read it for free. Let me know what you think.
Excellent stuff. Chris Wharf, how are you, dear boy? You all right?
I'm good, thank you. I'm energised. The transfer window is nearly over, so I'm crawling towards that point. But energised by the start of the season, and that's the word that we've said a lot over the course of the last 4 weeks, and a lot of people have said within Newcastle United, and that is very much how it feels after 2 matches into the Matthias Jäsler reign.
And you've had yourself a little haircut there as well, haven't you? It's good.
I have had myself a haircut, yeah, and I came in yesterday, and my son James looked at me and said, "Daddy, you've had your hair cut. You look really good." So I'm going to take that again. Nothing, that's a wonderful assessment. So.
Did he not just say, "Daddy, Lego"?
Oh, lovely stuff. When are you getting it finished, Chris? Are you going back today to get the rest of it done?
I ran out of money, so.
Excellent. Right then, chaps, should we dive into some headlines?
Let's do it.
Why not? Right then, Nico Time. Gonzalez joins with more to follow, Chris.
Yes, Nico Gonzalez has joined from Manchester City, Newcastle's most expensive signing of the summer window, the first they've made intra-Premier League as well, around about £48 million initially, rising to potentially 52. He comes into midfield. He's the player that Jäsler wanted. Newcastle are also trying to sign a forward, at least in one position, and that will be could be Matias Fernandez Pardo at Lille, although that's a very complicated deal and there are other irons in the fire.
Barnes and Baz, Baggy's beaten, George. Nice alliteration there.
Thank you very much. Yes, Newcastle United's first victory of the season. It's in the Carabao Cup. They beat Championship West Bromwich Albion at home. High-flying West Bromwich Albion. They had to do it the hard way. conceding a penalty to Isaac Price, but Toure and Barnes get Newcastle the win. It's a good moment, some minutes for a few of the other players, and yeah, they're into the next round where they will travel to Millwall. Ooh, look forward to that one, Chris.
Ooh. Training ground location found, Chris Woff.
Yes, we did a little insert into last week's main podcast because this just happened just as we were about to publish, but Newcastle United have secured the site that they want to build their new training ground on. They hope to be in by the 2029-30 season. They're hoping to invest about £190 million into a stadium they believe will be world-class, and it's at Wolsington Hall, close to Newcastle Airport, where a lot of the players live nearby, and it was also something Sir John Hall had purchased in 94 and initially had seen it was going to be an academy for Newcastle players. Instead, in the future, Newcastle hope that they're going to get planning permission, which they're going to apply for early next year, to move in to the site in 3 years' time.
And finally, Sand No Totnali. Headlines reach new low, clearly.
I don't want any complaints about that.
I want to distance myself from that.
No.
I want to distance myself from that massively. Headlines reach new low, but another reunion beckons, George Corgan.
Will it be as torrid for Alexander Isak? No. I mean, I've got that wrong, haven't I?
You have.
Will it be as torrid for Sandro Tonali as it was for Alexander Isak for the Liverpool match? Yeah, Newcastle's second league game. It's away to Tottenham. Tottenham was stuffed 3-0 by Brentford on the first day of the season. Tonali played, didn't look very good. They've subsequently beaten Charlton 5-1 in the Carabao Cup, but Tonali didn't play. Will he be applauded by Newcastle fans, the £100 million man? Will he be called the C-word like Alexander Isak was? Will he be compared to a small rodent as Alexander Isak was? Tune in and find out.
Will he bottle taking a penalty like Alexander Isak?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah. Right then, let's move on, chaps. The transfer window closes on September the 1st, and Newcastle expect it to be pretty hectic in these final few days. We'll come on to that, but first, Nico Gonzalez then, £48 million midfielder, 24 years old, signed from Manchester City on a long-term contract. What can we expect, Chris Woff?
What we can expect, theoretically, is somebody who will bring control to the base of Newcastle's midfield throughout the entire Eddie Howe era. There wasn't really an out-and-out sort of defensive midfielder signed, or it wasn't the priority. Howe spoke about not really playing with a defined number six, as they're now termed nowadays, but Yeisler plays with two in his 4-2-3-1 formation, and he likes one of them to be someone who's both a ball player but also physical and able to get around the field, and that's exactly what Newcastle think they've got in Nico Gonzalez, yeah. Who I'm told I have to refer to as Nico on the second mention, which is something I'm uncomfortable with, but apparently is how he is referred to at second mention, so I'm going to do that. He is a bit of a metronomic passer in many ways. I've got a stat for you from Opta that since his Premier League debut in February 2025, which came against Newcastle and he destroyed them, only Rodri, with 87, has made more successful passes per 90 minutes in the Premier League than Nico among midfielders. So he is 68. Now, that's partly because he played for Man City and so playing in a team who dominate the ball, but also shows that sort of style that he has. And he gets the ball and he uses it. He isn't. I think what Newcastle want to bring out of him is to almost be a bit more ambitious in the way that he passes, but what he is very good at is possession keeping and sort of keeping the tempo going, but he's also physically, he's very good at getting up and down the field, not necessarily quickly, he needs legs alongside him, but he's very good at tackling, so it's a bit of a coup, this one. You get people on the Man City side saying, oh, he wasn't good enough for Man City, and possibly not, certainly not getting in the side ahead of Rodri. Came into the period when Rodri was injured and then didn't get that much game time. Seemingly Enzo Maresca has come in and has decided he wants to take things in a different direction, but he's 24. He's someone who can still enter his prime, whereas when Newcastle were looking at sort of Pierre-Emile Højbjerg and João Palhinha, they were players who maybe were slightly past that and would have brought that leadership. I think that Nico is more experienced, but in a younger capacity. He has played in the Premier League. He's come through Barcelona's academy. He's played at Porto. He's then played at Man City. So a very good player in that regard. And Newcastle have referred to this one internally as Project Speed, which, George, would you like to explain where that comes from?
Well, it's not to do with his pace. No. I think that's fair to say, because a la Bruno, he's not the quickest around. But I think it's more of a dad joke, really. Project Speed, Speedy Gonzalez, for listeners, viewers of a certain vintage. Right. Andale. So yes, they called it that, which is quite fun. By the way, Now that we're on second mentions, I'm just going to refer to Chris as Woff throughout the rest of this podcast.
I'll not call him Woff. I'll not stoop as low as to call him Woff. Lovely. Yes. He's going to be plugging that gap that Bruno Guimaraes has left behind, George. And what a gap that is to plug.
It certainly is. Big shoes to fill. I mean, just one little digression. It's nice for Newcastle to make a signing who's beyond puberty. So that's good, 24 years old. Yeah. But, I mean, I think the quite important thing is that he has played in the Premier League. He's made 36 appearances for, obviously, a very good Manchester City team. He knows the division. That's not going to surprise him. So, theoretically, hopefully, won't need bedding in. You know, you can't necessarily say the same for all of Newcastle's other signings this summer. And, yes, he is that... he is that player, as Chris said, who will be looking to sort of dominate that midfield, pass the ball, set the tempo. Newcastle need that. They also need that. They need that experience. So that's good. And I actually saw him. I saw him in the chairman's suite just before the game against West Brom. He was brought in to say hello to people. There was a lovely moment. Alan Shearer was taken over to meet him, and Shearer said to him, you know, the first thing you do, make a tackle, everybody here will love you, really nice. And Nobby Solano was there too. Newcastle are doing a new thing this season, which is they're welcoming in former players into their chairman suite, really trying to make a fuss of them. I thought that was a really lovely touch, seeing that generation, the new generation, talking to two players who've obviously seen it and done it for Newcastle was a lovely moment.
Just on the plugging the Bruno Guimaraes gap, I just want to make clear that he's not a sort of necessarily a player in the Bruno mould. He takes that position in the squad to a certain degree, but whereas Bruno was very much, he was a creative force. He was sort of, he had that strong personality as well. He would drive the team forward in that regard. When Nico Gonzalez destroyed Newcastle at his Premier League debut, after the game, Pep Guardiola came out and described him as a mini Rodri. Now, that actually became a bit of a stick to beat him with, I think, at times at Man City, because he didn't quite necessarily live up to Rodri's massive standards at certain points, and so that's maybe why he isn't necessarily seen by some Man City fans as being a massive loss to them. But for Newcastle, what he can bring in that regard is something they haven't had post takeover. They haven't had someone who just passes, just gets the ball and will use it well. Will take the sting out of the game when necessary, but will also make sure that you just move the opposition around by just giving that extra little pass back, the smart little pass. And so you've got someone like Sean Stoher, who has really impressed his first two games, and he will look to make the progressive pass. That's not necessarily what Nico has done up till this stage. Newcastle do hope to extract more from him. And at Porto, he did actually get into the box a little bit more and score a few goals. But he's very much going to be in that deep-lying position. When George mentions the fact that he has Premier League experience, this is the first intra-Premier League signing, as I mentioned at the very start, Newcastle have made this summer. They have gone for other players in the Premier League and haven't necessarily got them. But I think that, as alongside the sort of age profile, the two players who Newcastle have signed since Yeisler have come in are both 24, so they've done the really young player signing up until this point. Four of the first six were under the age of 20, whereas now Dedic is there and really impressed in his first two games. And then also you have Nico, who should slot in there and be a lot expected of him immediately.
I think that idea of it being a coup as well is actually sort of quite important. Yes, it's Premier League experience. Yes, slightly older. But also that feeling of Newcastle have gone out and bought somebody that people know. People would have, you know, people already know. They know about him. And this feels like a big deal for Newcastle. And so it also sort of provides them with a bit of that, you know, forward momentum, good performance against Liverpool, a win against West Brom in the Cup. Nico comes on and is paraded in front of the crowd. I think that's like really good. That felt deliberate to me. You know, they haven't done that.
That was a really good touch, I thought, because it brought energy. And Newcastle, as you say, haven't done that often enough, I don't think.
Different way to announce a signing as well, wasn't it? I hadn't seen anything like that for a while, bringing someone out before it was actually sort of officially put out on socials and stuff like that. Oh, that was a nice touch.
Yeah.
He stands to inherit that Sandro Tonali song as well, doesn't he? He slots in quite nicely there, you know. He He eats paella. He drinks Estrella. He hates fucking Sunderland. It's pretty good. It slots in nicely. We don't need to do too much rewriting of that one. Yeah, Chris, more signings though to come in the final week of the window, do we think?
Well, that's certainly what Newcastle are hoping for, and it's certainly what Yeisler is hoping for. He said after the game that he will push every day to try and bring in what he wants, and he's very clear. He has been very clear to the hierarchy as to what he expects and what he wants, and he will continue to try and demand that. So, as a minimum, I think Newcastle will try and bring in at least one more, and that is going to be an offensive player. And what exact position, I think, just depends on who they can actually go for. I don't think all of the players they're looking at are necessarily all of them are left wingers or all of them are number 10s. There are sort of, it's a variety of different attacking profiles maybe that Newcastle possibly, that they'd like to do multiple, but probably can't do multiple or won't be able to pull that off. So instead it's like, can they do a player in this position? If not, can they do one in that position? Rather than really go massively far down the list to sign a player they don't necessarily want. So Matias Fernandez Pardo is someone they've liked for a long while. Eddie Howe really liked him. The recruitment team have really liked him for a long while, and seemingly Yeisler does as well. So Newcastle tried to get him last summer. Early in the summer, though, I think he would have been top target even above Victor Munoz for the wing berth, which eventually was filled by Bosman Oturi. But at that stage, it seemed like he didn't want to move if Newcastle weren't going to be in Europe or certainly not in the Champions League. He seems to have changed agents since, and maybe Lille are willing to do a deal, although they're a very difficult club to negotiate with, and I know Newcastle will find that difficult. So there isn't that much optimism in that regard necessarily, but they've also El Canoussou, someone who they liked when he was at Leicester City. He's at Stuttgart, a different profile of player, more of a sort of number 10. He's someone Newcastle have discussed previously and he's sort of in conversations at the minute as well. Not necessarily, it's not necessarily active, but someone there they could look at. There's also Musa at Feyenoord, the winger who keeps getting proposed sort of their way. So and there are options beyond that. So certainly, if Newcastle end the window without another attacker, I think they'll feel that they're slightly light. They do need an extra creative spark, I feel. But it feels like the Nico signing has given them a little bit of momentum. Just one side note as well on Nico. There's been a few different sort of fees floated to exactly what is, very similar prices, but like sort of £1 or £2 million either way for the initial fee. And I think part of the reason behind that is apparently Manchester City do all of their business in euros. So I don't know why, but Newcastle have had to pay the fee in euros, and then it's obviously being converted by certain people and saying, oh, we've paid whatever, £1 million, £47, £48 million. So I think that's part of the reason why on this one, there's a couple of different prices out there. I just thought that was I just didn't know that they'd
close. How would you
that
do that if you're transferring it from like one English bank account to another bank account? How would you then do that in euros?
Very good question.
I've got the mental image of somebody from Man City just going down to the local Bureau de Change with armfuls of, can you sort that out for us, mate? Can you change that into British for us? Just down the local Asda, you know, the little kiosk that they have. Anyway, George, Newcastle have brought in a lot of money this summer, haven't they? They've recouped a lot of transfer fee, but they've also spent a lot. Are they in any danger of hitting any kind of difficulties when it comes to UEFA?
Well, I mean, just to kind of reframe that slightly, I think one of the interesting things is there's obviously been this sort of big narrative, understandably, about the players Newcastle have sold and what they've lost, and the money that they brought in, and that is true. I think we would argue, I think we could make the argument that they've sold very well. I'm talking in terms of how much money they've brought in. It's what they do with it that counts. We saw last summer those two things don't necessarily go together. But they've sold well. They sold very efficiently with Tonali and Gordon. It was obviously a bit more difficult with Bruno, but if you take those three together, I think they've done very well. But yeah, now there is a different part of that story, which is that they've also spent a lot of money and they've brought in young, ambitious, talented footballers with a lot of potential who actively want to be at Newcastle. And I think it's important that that story is highlighted too. You know, it's asking a hell of a lot for them to be as good as Bruno, to be as good as Gordon, to be as good as Tonali, all those players could be. But we also know that those players didn't want to be at Newcastle anymore. And so, yeah, it's, you know, I think that's just an important part of the story. And yeah, I think, you know, one that deserves to be told. If we retreat back a little bit, the Gordon sale, which was what, £60 million, was it, Chris?
It was €70 million, yeah.
So you do your business in euros as well. That's really... Well, whatever. You do your business in euros. I do it in... You do it in sausages, probably. I don't know. But, like, the whole idea of that was, I mean, and really, you know, quite galling and quite alarming, is that Newcastle had to do that deal to get compliant. So it didn't touch the sides in terms of bringing money in to reinvest. So they sort of had to do that, you know, once it became clear they weren't going to be in Europe and, you know, were moving out of the Champions League, losing that Champions League revenue. The Tonali deal, the £100 million, gave them the license to refresh the squad. They didn't need to do the Tonali deal, but if they wanted to refresh it, reset it in the way they wanted, it made sense. And then I don't want to call Bruno a bonus because it was never part of the plan to sell Bruno. They wanted to keep him, but bringing in that revenue gives them even sort of greater leeway.
Just to clarify on the Gordon deal as well, it's up, rising up to 80 million euros. I think Newcastle initially had benchmarked a sort of 70 million euros figure, but they would have done it in pounds. But I think if they'd have got 70 million, they ended up getting rising up to 80 million. But what it means for Newcastle is that moving forward, they still have to be conscious of what they spend, because what is different in the rules, certainly at UEFA level, is that whereas under PSR in the Premier League, when it was the profit and sustainability rules, if Newcastle sold Sandro Tonali for a guaranteed £92.5 million, you could immediately bank that in the current year. Now that gets averaged over 3 years, your sales get averaged over the next 3 years. So it's not the immediate massive hit. The same goes for your expenditure as well, but it's different in that regard, and Newcastle are still having to be compliant moving forward. They still, they're not going to have European revenue coming in across this year, and so you have to factor that in to where they've had to lose sort of 60 million euros, pounds, whatever the exact figure is relative to what they earned from the Champions League last year. That's immediately come off the revenue, and yes, they're making commercial strides here and there, but it's not going to be fully offset. So they do need to be very much bringing money in rather than expending too much in the market. But they are the third highest net spender, third highest spenders, I think, in terms of what they've actually spent out. But obviously, they've brought in very, very well. So they do have to be conscious moving forward. Theoretically, I do think they have more wiggle room moving forward, but it's also about the wage bill. And like they have people like Nick Pope, who is third or fourth choice goalkeeper, who they are paying a substantial amount for, and if they can't move them on, they're going to be still paying that. They're paying a lot of the wages for Odysseus Flakadimos out at Sevilla, so you have to remember all these sort of things as well. The factors are in there. So yes, I don't think Newcastle are, they're very conscious that they're not going to breach moving forward, so I think that they aren't going to try and overstretch themselves. They have their plan, and they're going to stick to it where they need to be financially.
Finally, another new signing broken by our Chris, this one, a new doctor identified to replace Paul Catterson.
Yes, so Newcastle are bringing in Dr. Naheem Essali from Brentford. He's currently on gardening leave there. He may be in place at Newcastle as soon as possibly next month. Dr. Paul Catterson is moving on to the Premier League. He's currently serving his notice period. Sources at Newcastle say that he is still contracted until around November, I think. Whether once Dr. Ali arrives, whether Dr. Catterson, the long-serving and highly respected club doctor, whether he's allowed to leave for the Premier League at that stage remains to be seen, but yeah, Newcastle think that they've brought in someone who can succeed and follow the role of Dr. Catterson, because we know how important the medical department is at any Premier League club. You need to have the quick prognosis provided or be pointed in the correct direction as to this is the specialist you need to see. And so hopefully, Dr. Ali comes in and continues the work of Dr. Catterson.
I'd just like to wish Paul Catterson all the very best. He's a lovely man, lovely fella. You see him around the training ground on match day. He's a great fella and has played a huge role at Newcastle and will be missed.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
L-E-D-E-N-E-T. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 100% match on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
So on to the training ground. Chris, late last week, just after we published the podcast, obviously, Newcastle announced a significant breakthrough on their plans for a new training ground. Chris, please run us through the where's and why for us.
So this has been long trailed, and it feels like a significant moment that we have actually now had an announcement from the club that in early 2027, they intend to apply for planning permission to build a new world-class training facility, as they put it, on a 260-acre site at Wolsington Hall, which is very close to Newcastle Airport. It's actually even closer to the private airport, which obviously Newcastle use for a lot of their matches.
You could literally just chuck new signings over the fence into the training ground, couldn't you, if it gets to that point?
It's a very brutal way of so welcoming close. Them. But yeah.
Yeah, it would be a strange way. I mean, it's like, here we've got this world-class facility, and then just throw them over the fence.
Over the fence, yeah.
But yeah, so it's Newcastle have acquired or have agreed to the deal to acquire the land. They've been working on it for quite a while. I think at one stage, maybe they were even looking at projects that could be running in parallel with the training ground, whether that was going to be sort of housing or other sort of building. I think they've just decoupled that for now, at the very least, and sort of focused on we need this training facility, and we need it as soon as possible. It's been promised post-takeover. We're 5 years in. And so they've bought the land. They haven't finalised exact plans, which is part of the reason why they haven't gone to planning yet. They have a grand idea of what they want to build. I was at the current training ground last week alongside other journalists after we'd played a very low quality media match, and saw the £10 million extension to the current site, which Newcastle have put in. But while we're going around, we were also shown a sort of scale model of the site and what Newcastle may hope to do with the site in the initial phase. And so the initial phase, all in, it could cost around £190 million. In the initial phase, Newcastle will certainly move in the first team, and they will have a big first team training centre, which is going to be a far larger footprint than they are currently on. And then the men's academy will come along as well, and they're going to have an indoor barn like they have at the current site at Benton, although it's described as being sort of NFL quality, NFL size. I don't know exactly what that means, presumably just slightly bigger than the current one. But then they have part of the site which they cannot build on for conservation reasons. But then there's the potential moving forward that the women's team and the women's academy could move in there in the future. They've given themselves the capacity to do that, but at the same time they also are going to retain the Knoxes as the current training ground, which, as I say, they've ploughed millions into. I think it's £30 million over the course of the last few years, and they have top class facilities there. So could the women's team move in there even temporarily before? They're giving themselves sort of optionality, is the word that they like to use on these sorts of matters. But the idea, the hope, is that Newcastle will be in by 29-30, the start of that season. Which would run in parallel with the Knox deal they have, the sponsorship of the current training ground. I think that's just a nice sort of, it wasn't necessarily planned in that regard, but it just has fit nicely. And yeah, they're going to start consulting with the local residents in Wolsington and sort of explore through their plans. And the exact specifics of what they do in each of the buildings, there's a country house which has been fire damaged, other derelict buildings which they're going to convert and want to restore. They're still deciding the exact what exactly they're going to do with each of those. So some of them could be a hotel or an on-site accommodation for players. It could be like a daycare nursery for players and families. There's various different options they've got for them, obviously a media centre at some stage. But it's very, very exciting that rather than this just be something theoretical Newcastle talking about, this is the first actual announcement we have of them. We want to have spades in the ground at some point in 2027, because we are going to go for planning permission in early 2027.
We've got a quote here from David Hopkinson as well, who says, our proposed complex will create the world's best performance environment for our teams. We will preserve and enhance a historic estate, be a great neighbour. The COO, Brad Miller, as well, said this is a homecoming for Newcastle United, given Sir John Hall's initial vision for the site in the 90s. A huge optimism then, George, but both of those men made mention of a rigorous and thorough planning process. Why is all this stuff so important?
It's existential, it's massive, it's the great leap forward, it's the thing that we've needed to see. I can take you back to the first day post-takeover, or the day of the takeover, talking to Mirdad Gadousi, talking to Amanda Staveley, Jesmond Dean House, about what was going to happen next. And Mirdad said, oh yeah, you know, there'll be a new stadium, there'll be a new training ground maybe 4 or 5 years away, so you don't want people to get sort of too excited initially. That's how long it'll take to do. Well, we're 5 years in, and the training ground still hasn't happened. Now, that has, you know, that was never part of the plan. The plan was that it should be up and running by now, and there have been delays. And those delays foster uncertainty and questions about the ownership. I mean, those questions haven't gone away, but questions about that, questions about the project itself. Again, if you go back to the first window and the first windows post-takeover, players being told you're joining something new and exciting, you know, and massive. We want to be winning everything. We want to be challenging for everything. We haven't got a training ground yet, but we will, and we'll have a stadium, we will. And then that first wave of players are now leaving, and they haven't seen any of that progress. There have been some real difficult moments, you know, particularly you go back to Eddie Howe, in those moments of struggle for his first team, the first team that led everything, he hasn't been able to point to his players, okay, right, we're not where we want to be at the minute, but look, here's this training ground coming along, stick with the project. He's not been able to say, okay, we're not exactly where we want to be in the league table at the minute, but you get paid the best out of any players in the Premier League. He's not been able to say, this is an elite environment, you know, this is the best environment. And, you know, as I say that, and as Woff put it, like, the training ground where they are has got better, and it is, like, much better than it was, but it's never been it's not the best, and it's never been the best. And so this idea of Newcastle being an elite football club has only ever been a theory. They've managed to be an elite team in moments, you know, in winning a trophy and getting into the Champions League, but because they don't have an elite environment, and because they can't pay elite wages, they can't compete, like, season after season after season. So this is, like, hugely important. And, like, when that first spade goes into the ground, it's like this, yeah, it's like, okay, this is actually real. This is happening. So it's not to kind of denigrate what actually has happened around the club, because there has been a lot of stuff and it has been important. But this is proper existential stuff, really important.
Just quickly on that, like, the things that George mentioned there, so the improvements they've made at the current training ground, like, now they have the latest extension, they have, like, a massive gym now. They have a huge player dressing room, which is essentially like an NFL size one as well. It's absolutely massive. But then they also have added, rather than the jokes about players recovering in wheelie bins, they have, and have had for a few years, a sort of hydrotherapy pool and an underwater treadmill. But they're gonna have the idea is underground treadmill.
Really difficult to pull one of those off. Yeah, absolutely.
but the idea is that the new training ground, that they'll have, like, swimming pool sized facilities in that regard, and all of these things, rather than bolt-ons as it is now, where it's very difficult to get the flow and be purpose built. This is going to be a 268-acre site. Now, as I said, part of that they can't build on because it's for conservation reasons. But relative to the size of other training grounds, if you look at the acreage, this is massive. This is a huge site, and part of that is to also future-proof themselves, because at the minute, the idea that Newcastle have is that what they're going to build is world-class. But in 8 to 10 years' time, something else would come along and maybe be the new definition of world-class, and Newcastle need X or Y. And so they've given themselves the provision to be able to, in future, add that on. And again, that sort of future-proofing, hopefully, is going to serve them so well moving forward.
As a fan as well, I think it's nice to finally have something to grab hold of. You know, I think I've been talking about this for a little while on the show, and I think we've needed to see some kind of development here. And I think it's nice to finally have something tangible that you can look at, that you can talk about with other people and get a little bit excited about. Because I think, honestly, some of the conversations I've had over the last couple of months, people have been worried. people have been genuinely concerned about where is all of this, you know, all of this infrastructure, and when is it going to appear. And I think it's nice to have this finally to kind of, you know, as a starting point at least for that conversation.
Well, I mean, you made the point about the planning, you know, rigorous planning process and all of that kind of stuff. And so this, you know, the diggers haven't, you know, started their work yet. But yeah, this feels, it's belated, it's been necessary. You go back again to the start, Amanda calling the training ground disgraceful and, you know, all of that they inherited. If you're trying to be the best, you've got to like be able to show it off to people. You've got to like make players, athletes feel like they're surrounded, and you know, it's you're asking them to be elite. Well, you've got to give them elite facilities. And yeah, it's about time that Newcastle off the pitch caught up to what the team has done up to this point. Of course, it's a very new team now, but like, you know, if you want to be the best in the world, you've got to give people the best facilities.
Just a preview of some stories which will come up at some stage as well. I imagine we'll get stories about newts or badgers or owls and the conservation that Newcastle need to go through to move forward for training grounds. It always happens whenever there's a big build set. So I'm just giving you an insight into what we'll have along the way, I am sure.
Bats as well. I think bats are a big one, aren't they? Yeah,
definitely. All this stuff is important. So there's
I wasn't saying that. It isn't important. I was just sort of saying that is. When you say the rigorous planning process, these are the sort of things that are going to come along.
Absolutely. Right then, two games unbeaten for Yasser. I can't pronounce his name again. I did all right. I started off, got it nailed down, and now I've regressed and I've gone back over. Two games unbeaten for Yasser Ball. New signer Nico Gonzalez was introduced to a full house at St James's Park before kickoff on Wednesday. The game, ultimately, a fairly comfortable win against an informed Championship side. And Newcastle are into the third round of the Carabao Cup. I'm not sure if I'd call it comfortable, Chris. Would you?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It was Newcastle were deserved winners, but without a shadow of a doubt. But there were some uncomfortable moments, so I wouldn't say that it was I thought that again for the second match. What's going to be great this season? I think Newcastle are going to be exciting to watch. They're probably going to be tear your hair out moments, but there's also going to be thrilling moments in attack, in particular the way that they throw bodies forward, the way that they swarm to try and win the ball back, the fullbacks overlapping, the introduction that Amor Dedic has had to the Premier League and then the Carabao Cup English football basically has been exceptional. I think he's started really, really well. Sean Stier as well, an 18-year-old lad who looks just so good on the ball, so calm, and yes, his passing can be erratic, but that's because he wants to be on the ball, he wants to be progressive in the way that his role and Dedic's role in the opening goal that Newcastle scored, which seems that Basman Oturi got the touch on, but there's a few debates as to whether he did or whether the defender did, but so I think going forward there's a lot to be excited about. I think in midfield you can see why Nico is essential to come in, because I still think off the ball Newcastle can. Teams can run through them at times. Liverpool did it, and then West Brom have done the same. And defensively, there are question marks. I mean, yes, two of the goals they've conceded have been penalties, and one was a free kick, but I still think there's moments where you just think that there needs a bit of refinement here. And I thought it was interesting that the back four were basically the continuation from the weekend. I know he didn't have many options, but he stuck with the same back four as well, and I think that's to try and get some of that continuity there. So yeah, definitely it's going to be a roller coaster season, I think, and certainly watchable in that regard.
It was a game that Newcastle were mostly in control of, although there was still an element of chaos there, George, wasn't there, that we had against Liverpool at the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, again, just a sort of general observation. I didn't think Newcastle started with enough urgency, and it was like sort of wanting to see a little bit more of that. And of course, it wasn't a great start. But the thing that I found really encouraging was that urgency did come. And again, Yeisler made good, aggressive substitutions that made the team better. I thought that was interesting too, seeing the team peak towards the end of the game, as opposed, you know, you would have liked them to have started sort of properly on the front foot, but they ended very strongly, which I thought was good. And yeah, he made six changes. He had to give minutes to some of the other players. It's against a Championship team, albeit one who've started the season very well. He was able to rotate. That's going to be important moving forward, giving some minutes to other players, and some of them certainly took their chance. Chris referred to Stur's erratic passing. He also specialises in erotic passing. I'm looking forward to seeing more of that. And yeah, Dedic, like a fullback who arrives, you know he's worked with Jaisler before, but there's that feeling of, okay, well, this is a kind of a bit of a desperation signing in the sense that they've just got to bring in a fullback. Tino Livramento is the first choice at right back. Well, he's kind of changed that narrative a bit so far. I mean, just brilliant he was against West Brom. I mean, so good against Liverpool for, you know, debut with minimal training time with his new team. But God, yeah, proper marauding fullback play.
The cross for the first goal was sublime.
Oh, just brilliant. Excellent. Yeah, just brilliant. Yeah.
Two assists from him. The goal to make it 2-1 as well. A nice little corner routine. There's been some changes in the set pieces. And Harvey Barnes, a little bit more decisive than others in the resultant melee. Barnes had the initial shot and then charged into the box to finish off Chris. It was good to see that.
Yeah, and I mean, Barnes he's such a curious footballer. His stats are fantastic from a goal scoring perspective. He does this so often when he comes on in matches, and he has sort of game changing contributions. Against Liverpool, I thought that he worked very hard, one of the hardest off the ball performances I've seen him contribute to Newcastle, but on the ball I didn't think he was necessarily great, didn't use it that well, and it's those sort of moments whenever you think he's going to kick on, whenever you think that, but that's, it's harsh in some ways, because if you just look at what he does actually contribute in goals, but I do always expect more from him. But I think he's one of the senior players in the squad. He hasn't necessarily been considered a leader before, but he perhaps is stepping up in that regard. He seemed very vocal when he came on as well. He was talking to his teammates, telling them where to be. And so, yeah, another very, very important contribution from Barnes, because, yes, he pops up with that one and then gets the eventual winner as well, which was another very good move. Started by Voldemorta nicking the ball. Wissa gives it back to him. Voldemorta runs upfield and then play down the right. And then, yeah, eventually Dedic with another good ball in, and Barnes finishes. So he is, Newcastle gave him a new contract over the summer, and hopefully he's starting to repay some of that faith, really.
But just very quickly, he came on for Toure at half-time. I thought Toure was poor, actually. I mean, I know he got that goal, but I didn't think he played well. So what do you want in that circumstance? Well, A, you really want to set those standards, and if someone's not doing it, you replace them, and you want the person who comes on to put their own marker down. Yeah, I agree with what Chris said about the Liverpool match, but I thought he was then excellent when he came on. He did that thing that you want Toure to do. He was direct. He got forward. He's looking to do stuff. Yes, it's against West Brom, but I thought that was really good. And yeah, again, another one of those substitutes who came on and made a difference.
Another little hiccup from Lewis Hall, George. He was unlucky, wasn't he? Obviously, he gave the penalty away at the end of the Liverpool game, and it's happened again. History repeating itself last night.
Yeah, I mean, from where I was, it was a definite penalty. I mean, I think, you know, you're raising your hands like that. It was quite a long way away from the ball, so I don't think there's any doubt that it was a penalty. These things happen. Hopefully that's now stopped happening.
Hopefully.
if we're talking about sort of difficult moments or, hiccups like that, the first goal too, I don't think Newcastle came out of that with much credit. I think Ewan Jowen could have done better. You don't want to be beaten on that side. He was let down, however, by a wall, which was not a wall in any way, shape or form. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. The wall, just two-man wall, it crumbles. Jacob Ramsey turns his back before the ball is moving inside before the ball's been kicked, so it just creates all this space.
Sven Botman was not happy. He was
no, I mean, it was yeah. It was awful. Yeah. I thought that
Jowen
was
not happy as well.
No, I mean, I don't think Jowen covered himself in glory, but he wasn't given any help. And so, you know, it's those little details that need to be improved upon, because yeah, that was not good.
What did we make of Nick Voldemorta, Chris? Some moments, but another kind of frustrating evening overall.
Yes, I mentioned his work for the third goal, and I thought he was important in the build-up for that. And there was also, in the first half, there was a lovely turn on the edge of the box where he set Willock to his left, and Willock probably should have done better, should have scored. I disagree slightly with what George said earlier, that the Newcastle didn't start well. I actually thought they started with quite a bit of impetus. I thought they were built on the sort of Nico Gonzalez feel-good factor. And early on, without necessarily threatening massively, I thought they had a bit of that injection of pace. And that was coming from Willock. He was chasing things down. It was almost like Yaisler decided, if I'm going to play Voldemort up top, and obviously he tried him as a 10 and as a striker in pre-season, if he's going to play Voldemort up top, you need Willock, or you need somebody running in behind, you need those legs, and he looked to be Voldemort's legs, but then it's still that moment of that actual involvement in and around the box. He only had 5 touches. He was on the pitch for 90 minutes. He only had 5 touches in the penalty area. He should have had a penalty in the second half as well, by the way. I thought that was a penalty when he looked to be tripped from behind. But it's those actual defining moments, the real... He doesn't seem to be in position. Like the fact that Barnes and Toure were in the position to score those goals, if you're Alan Shearer looking at that, would you have thought, I want to be in that position, whereas Voldemort doesn't necessarily be busting a gut to get into that role. And I just think sometimes the ball doesn't stick enough. He just still looks like a bit of a square peg being fit into a round hole in terms of the way that Newcastle want to play. In some ways, the Yaisler ball actually seems even more physical than Howe ball. And so is there any way that you can fit Voldemort into that? And Newcastle have a big decision to make. There's sort of 5 or 6 days left in the market. They're looking at all possibilities as to what they would do up front. And I think it's going to be as much a financial decision as a footballing decision. And I know that you'd say, well, in some ways that's obvious, but actually for Voldemort, it's more so that Newcastle can't... If Newcastle take a massive hit by agreeing for what would be a significantly lower fee than the initial £64 million they paid from last year in the last few days of the market, that, in an SCR capacity, in a UEFA capacity, will be very damaging to them moving forward, while the cost is still being amortised over the length of his contract. They could potentially look to loan him out and see if they can build his value up that way, or a loan with an option or an obligation. But if you loan him out and it doesn't necessarily work, he comes back, and has that worked, it may even have a negative effect moving forward. If you look at it negatively, it could have a positive effect. Or does Yaisler say, no, I am going to find a way to fit him in? Because the Newcastle also have the problem at the minute that Willa Sula's out for at least a couple of weeks with a foot problem. So they actually have a lack of forward options. You'd suspect that it's going to be Wissa up front with Willock just off him this weekend because of that. But yeah, Voldemort, it still doesn't quite feel right. You really, really want it to work, but early signs aren't necessarily massively encouraging, I wouldn't say.
It sounds very harsh, but I'm going to say this anyway. And I have caveated stuff in the past, and again, you can see he's got a lovely touch. You know he's got something. I just don't see how he ever becomes a Newcastle United footballer. That is my real concern at this point. I did watch the match with Alan last night, and he's sort of thinking similar things. You're just desperate for him to impact. Like, you know, we know he's got the talent to score goals because he did it last season. We've seen that talent in touches and things like that, but he's a moment footballer. He's like a one-touch footballer. He's not impacting games. He's not making games his own. It's really unfair to make this comparison. I know he was playing as a kind of number 9 against West Brom, but I was at Fulham Chelsea on Monday night, and Cole Palmer played in that number 10 role. And Cole Palmer didn't go at the World Cup. Walter Mahler did go at the World Cup with a very average Germany side. But like the way Palmer impacted that game in that deeper position, he's like unplayable, absolutely unplayable, brilliant, involved all the time, wants the ball, can be physical, can dribble with the ball, can ghost with the ball. I look at Walter Mahler sometimes and I think, you could do those things. But so, you know, like that goal record he had last season was really good at the start. And it was like, okay, well, if you're a forward, your job is to score goals. If you score goals, you can then forgive everything else. But if you're not scoring goals, or if you're having an average game, you have to find a way of making an impact, whether it's by making a nuisance of yourself, whether it's by pressing and running, whether it's just by like defending. And I watch these games and he doesn't have an impact. He doesn't make himself felt. And I just think it's a real problem. And, you know, I would love Newcastle to find a way to integrate him and give him a showcase for his talent, because we know it's there. But it's also incumbent on him to use his talent and find a way of making an impact. And he's not doing it.
Yeah, he's a bit of a passenger at the moment, isn't he? We can't really afford that at the current state of things.
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural, because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 100% match on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Chris, you mentioned Joe Willock earlier on. For all the world, it looked like he would be leaving Newcastle this summer, didn't it? How are we with that now? And have you asked Matthijs Jijsler about that?
Well, if Eddie Howe was still in charge of Newcastle, I think that Willock would be leaving. And I think even after Jijsler first came in, the assumption was that he would be leaving. The goal against Liverpool has helped change that a bit, and also the fact that he has shown something different to the other midfielders, even who Newcastle may sign over the course of the next week. That running capacity that he has from deep, he looks fit. He hasn't had a full pre-season or a campaign over the last 2 years where he has been able to just be the full Chris.
He looks well up for it.
He hasn't been at peak form and fitness for a couple of years. He looks back to that, 27. He isn't the final 11 months of his deal. Besiktas have been chasing him, but I think now he probably will end up getting a new deal. Now, just before I touch upon my exchange with Jijsler, I just wanted to highlight that Jijsler at the end of the match as well, and that was probably one of the highlights of the game as well, that Anthony Elanga had clearly been pulled back and fouled on the touchline, and Jijsler and his backroom staff were absolutely dumbfounded by that decision. But the whistle went almost immediately afterwards, and Bobby Madley, who had a difficult evening as referee, I'll put it that way, Elanga was furious, and so Jijsler runs onto the field and calms down Elanga, and then proceeds to himself go across to Bobby Madley and make it clear that he thought that the decision was absolutely baffling. So it was almost like a do as I say and not as I do type approach, because we know how he's on the touchline.
Can I just interject before you talk about your exchange? I thought that was interesting. It's something that I mentioned and we were talking about last night. That relationship between Jijsler and his players, it's very tactile. It's like when you see players come on, he's touching them, he's touching their cheek. It seems like there's a very close relationship. And of course, he himself has said, like, his presence on the touchline is about showing that he's there with the team in those moments. Now, Eddie Howe had a very close relationship with his players, but it was sort of expressed differently. And I just thought those sort of early moments are kind of really interesting, seeing how those things are developing. On the Willock thing, again, we have to sort of remember what happened in the early days of Eddie Howe, that Sean Longstaff, suddenly felt love from a manager and was transformed from the player that, felt completely marginalised under Steve Bruce. You look at Fabian Scher, how he'd been jettisoned under Steve Bruce. And I'm not having a go at Steve Bruce. This just happens sometimes, And then Scher's still here and has just earned a new contract. These stories are good. If Jijsler can come in and Willock then becomes the player that we've seen in those little bursts of moments, but he's never been able to sort of quite establish himself. Yeah. That saves money. That saves Newcastle money in the transfer window. That's not a retrograde thing. Willock has got experience. He knows the club. Like, if you know you're going to get 1-2 really good years out of Joe Willock, keeping him isn't a negative thing. It's a positive thing, and a new manager can have that effect. Over to you, Chris.
Yes, well, I think the official term for what happened to me is that I was Jijsler'd after the game. It seems that Matthijs Jijsler is going around the press room, and at certain points, as we've said previously, he's not someone who's going to waste words. If he doesn't like a question, or if he thinks he's already answered it, or if he believes that the sufficient answer is one or two words, then he will give that. So I asked him about whether Joe Willock was likely to stay now, and then followed it up by talking about Nick Voldemort as well, and Ollie is just about to play the exchange between the two of us.
Joe Willock started again tonight. Do you expect Joe to stay beyond the end of the window?
Pardon?
Joe Willock, do you expect him to stay beyond the end of the window? And what about Nick Voldemort? Is there a chance that he could go, or do you expect him to stay?
For all the players, so if you want to go now through all the squad, I expect him to stay. As we're talking today, but you know as well, football is quite complex and things can change from one day to the other.
Clipped and Frosty. Forthright, I think. Yeah, Frosty, probably a good Frosty. Way of putting that there as well, yeah.
I wonder if in his welcome pack when he joined the club, he got a little note that just said, Chris Woff will ask questions, you won't like them. Just make sure you get on
Eddie.
His arse.
Love from Eddie.
Love from Eddie, yeah. Excellent stuff. No appearances for the academy players in the squad on Wednesday night, but we do have a little extra time show all about the academy, Chris. Would you like to explain that?
Yes, so I spent time with people inside the academy, Steve Harper, the director, Robbie Stockdale, who's the under-21s lead coach, and then a couple of players as well who featured during pre-season, and Dylan Charlton, who's a left-back, and Henry Johnson, a centre-back. And to find out really about the position of the academy in Newcastle 2.0, that we are in a position where Newcastle have spent a lot of money on players aged 20 and under, as you've said, and so does that mean the academy is redundant? Does it increase the importance of it? Where do they see themselves fitting into it? And I thought it was great to get their insight and to hear from them as to how they thought what seemed a really positive preseason. A lot of young players did get opportunities. You mentioned they didn't play against West Brom, but they were in and around the squad. So yeah, please, if you want to listen to that and don't yet subscribe, please give it a try. If not, if you are a subscriber, then it should be in your feed already.
We can develop them to a certain level, and then we must get that bridge right to first team football. There aren't many Lumi Miley's who go straight through. So yeah, I think evidently Anthony Munda going on loan to Swindon is a good example of how we can expose people who've probably got a little bit of 21's fatigue, who need a new stimulus and a new opportunity, and maybe expose you to things that 21's football can't give them. You know, win at all costs on a Saturday at 3 o'clock. People are fighting hard to pay mortgages and put food on the table, and the win bonus is really a big factor in that Saturday afternoon football. It's getting them that exposure, whereas if they go and do well, then there is an opportunity to see if they're ready for our first team, which is a big ask. But if not, they've been developed to a level where somebody, we get a return on the investment and then can reinvest the money in making our program and processes better. Or whereas now, I think in 5 years it's evident that we've gone from an academy that couldn't sign anybody, and we've moved through signing young players from Port Vale, from Oldham, from Luton, from West Brom, Birmingham. Last year a boy left Liverpool to join us, and this year a boy's left Arsenal to join us, which is a real sign of the environment, the program, the player development model that we have, as well as the wider football club.
I get the players at the back end of their academy journey, which I think the step that they've got to take from the 21s into any first team is the hardest they'll do. Because if I'm a senior player seeing this young boy come through in my position, I don't want him to take my place. So there's competition in football all the time. I would see it as a challenge. If somebody comes in my position, can I be better than him? And if I feel that my opportunity isn't here because of that, then where do I need to go to make a career for myself? I think that's the harsh reality of it. So to answer your question, yes, it's dog eat dog. The final step for them from 21s into any first team is the hardest they'll ever make. And then the next step is staying there. And we need to prepare them properly for that.
I know we've done bits and pieces about the academy in the past, haven't we? But this is a very different episode. I would suggest checking it out and having a listen, because it is really, really interesting. I enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah,
I listened to it yesterday.
I'm biased, obviously, but it's just Chris has done a really good job, as has Ollie. It is one of the things that differentiates us, and just going sort of in depth with people at the academy, really fascinating, some really interesting conversations there. Please have a listen.
Right then, the draw for the next round of the Carabao Cup could be as many as 7 all Premier League ties in round 3, Liverpool, Spurs. But Newcastle won't be one of them as we face a trip to Bermondsey to take on Millwall. That should be fun, Chris.
I mean, part of me is excited and pleased because it is a new ground for me, but then the vast majority of me is sort of really...
terrified.
Terrified, faces trepidation about this. But and Millwall are flying high, top of that, only 2 games in, but top of the Championship, had a very good season last year, so it will not be a straightforward occasion either.
It certainly won't. Right then, let's move on to the weekend approaching. Spurs, Saturday at 5:30 p.m. We don't usually go overboard on match previews, but this could be a very interesting game, couldn't it, chaps? And has the potential to boost or puncture that good feeling that's been building over the last couple of weeks. Another team with a raft of new players. They came a cropper against a more settled Brentford on the opening day, didn't they, George?
Yeah, I mean, really fascinating what they've done this summer. They've gone big, you know, the way of working under their previous sort of regime, the Daniel Levy regime, didn't spend a lot of money or were a bit parsimonious. They've absolutely sort of blown that sort of thing out the window. They've brought in experienced players, our very own, or previously our own, Sandro Tonali, one of them. And they've kind of really done what the manager is seeking to do, De Zerbi. I mean, one of the fascinating narratives about this season is that sense of change and transition at the what we would call legacy top six clubs, big six clubs, aside from Arsenal, who suddenly look like the kind of, you know, having been second place and bridesmaids and, you know, desperate to win the title, suddenly look like the settled team, the team to beat. Every other one of those clubs is in a form of transition, like either with a new manager, a new permanent manager, starting their first season, as in Spurs, and you just don't know what to expect from them. They got stuffed by Brentford on the opening day, had a man sent off. Awful performance for them. So it becomes a really interesting moment again. Like, we've seen glimpses of the new Newcastle against Liverpool. They followed that up with a win in the League Cup. Can they go to a Spurs team who you'd have thought things would have been pretty optimistic a week or so ago? Is there nervousness at their stadium? Can Newcastle take advantage? Can Newcastle show on the road that sense of fearlessness that they did against Liverpool?
And two more have joined from Man City since that Brentford defeat. Attacker Savinho and perennial Newcastle wrecker Omar Marmoush. Interesting, Chris. Two big signings, those. Chris has muted his microphone there, ladies and gents, and is currently talking away to nobody. Congratulations, Chris. Nice to have you back.
I enjoyed that,
good,
Chris. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Some of your most insightful chats so far, Chris.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Well, you don't like it when I slurp out my water bottle, so I tried to mute for that and then forgot to unmute. But, so Man City have sold Nico Gonzalez to Newcastle this week and then brought in a lot of money for Savinho and Omar Marmoush. Savinho scored twice in his debut in the League Cup in midweek. I actually think Savinho's quite a good signing. Omar Marmoush is being effective against Newcastle, as you've mentioned, and basically nobody else. But in English football, he does have a ludicrous record against them, including that game I mentioned that Nico Gonzalez destroyed them, and it was Marmoush who scored the goals in that match. I look at Spurs, and basically all of their players, I think in some ways you could make a comparison with Newcastle last summer and say that they've probably, quote-unquote, overpaid for just about everyone who they've spent money on. But are they going to have the positive effect that they want them to? Obviously, they didn't in the first game of the season. Can these two take them up to the next level? That remains to be seen. But yeah, I think there's a lot of Newcastle fans who will be concerned that Marmoush has managed to get his transfer sorted before Newcastle turn up, because if his previous record's anything to go by, then he will score.
Now, George, there's a rather large Italian elephant in the room, isn't there? Sandro Tonali. Taboo or not taboo?
That's taboo
or not taboo.
Oh, taboo. Yeah. Yep. Well, how would you answer that?
Oh, boo him like fuck.
Yeah.
Make it uncomfortable for him. Really get in his head, annoy the life out of him. He's gone now. I don't give a shit. I know he was part of that wonderful team that won the cup. Oh, brilliant. No, make it a nightmare for him. Make it horrible.
Yeah, it's a very interesting one because he sort of left with barely a kind of whimper in a way, didn't he? And I mean, we know that he's this kind of cool character, a bit like Alexander Isak. I mean, obviously he didn't leave in the same circumstances, but there was always this sort of coolness to him. And I don't think we ever felt that we lost our hearts to him in the same way that we did to Bruno, perhaps, you know, who like wore his heart on his sleeve and was like, you know, that. But
I think with Tenali, George, sorry to jump in, I think there was an air of inevitability about it anyway.
I felt like
he was always going to go, whereas I think with the other ones, it was like, oh, really? Oh, I didn't want Bruno to go.
You could also paint a sort of picture where we could feel really aggrieved about that in the sense of how much the club stood by him through that very long ban for gambling offences. You know, he absolutely left the club in the lurch. Signing when he did, he was immediately then suspended for most of that first season. And the club went the extra mile in looking after him. Sorry. Now, he talked about sort of wanting to pay that back. And, Newcastle then win a trophy. That's the thing we've all wanted to see. He's a part of that team. He was sensational in the second half of that season. And, like, maybe that's enough. Like, maybe that was enough because it's, like, it's kind of horrible to sort of say it out loud now, but he becomes a legend. Isak became a legend. Bruno became a legend. And so has he paid us back? You know, did he pay us back for that? I don't know. Maybe that's, like, enough. But, yeah, there was a kind of feeling of transaction about it, I think.
I was going to use the word transient, and it's almost been
transient.
I think it's the same at Spurs. He's basically turned. I mean, it didn't get enough coverage really at the time, but when Newcastle went to AC Milan not long after he'd signed, and he basically said, "I didn't really want to leave here, and if I did leave here, I thought I was going to go to Real Madrid or Barcelona," and basically spent the majority of his time wanting to go back to Italy, and he's basically gone to Spurs and said the same sort of thing, really, that I've moved here for family reasons, but ideally we knew he wanted to go back to Italy. So I think in some ways I find it refreshing that he's sort of honest about that, but at the same time that doesn't endear him to you.
No.
To go back to like the start of last season, again, I've told this story, it was watching a cup game in the pub, in the Dolphin in London, meeting up with Newcastle fans. Ollie was there. And like having a conversation with someone who says, "I think Tonali's the best." I can't remember if it was like the best midfielder or just the best player I've ever seen in a black and white shirt. And on that form in the second half of the season before, that wasn't an outrageous thing to say. He was just like the way he scanned, the way he could anticipate. He knew the ball was already moving on before he's got it. Everything's progressive. He's got that energy. Could sort of do a bit of everything, box to box. But he didn't live up to those heights last season. And, he was a long way away from that. I think now we have a better insight into why last season was so tough, particularly in the Premier League, because I think you've got a trio of big players whose heart wasn't in it anymore. I think that's a bit harsh on Bruno because he did keep going until the very end. But I think you're talking about that sort of narrative within the dressing room. And £100 million feels like a good price, feels like a very good price for Tonali. So, yeah, he will get booed, but it doesn't have the same edge as an Isak, does it? But,
no. Yeah. The level of nastiness, I don't think, will be quite there. Fitness issues, Chris, probably too soon for Dan Byrne, I'm presuming.
Well, Dan Byrne used his programme notes before the West Brom game to suggest that he could be out until after the national break. He'd like to come back sooner, but so I think it's going to be a few weeks for the newly minted Newcastle captain before he actually does captain the side. Alhaji Bamba didn't play on Wednesday, but as far as we're aware, no fitness concerns there necessarily. Same with Toure. It seemed that was more tactical or fitness related, but more building up his match fitness rather than not being ready. And Willisuda, as I mentioned earlier, at least a couple of weeks, that may even be towards the international break as well. So I think Wissa may play as the number 9, and whether that means Willick plays as the number 10, does Nico Gonzalez come straight into the team in midfield as well? That'll be an interesting call. He's definitely going to be in the squad, but whether Eisler throws him straight in there, I think they're the most likely potential changes from that Liverpool team. Otherwise, I expect it to be the same lineup.
Right then, chaps, just before we finish off, I'll say Pod on the Tyne will be on YouTube every week, but there's plenty more for podcast listeners as well, with matchday reaction shows and more. We offer ad-free listening via our subscription service, where you can also find the Extra Time podcast feed, which hosts exclusive special feature shows. All subscribers also get access to our Discord server, where there's lively conversation about the show and the football as well, of course. Podonthetyne.supportingcast.fm is where you can pick up a subscription. Also, check us out on social media as well. Just stick Pod on the Tyne at any of your socials and you'll probably find us on there. Get in touch with us on email, podonthetyne@gmail.com. We always like to hear from you. And I think that is just about it. Thank you very much for your time, George Culkin.
You're very welcome. Whilst we're doing plugs, we have to say we have another live show coming up in October at the Gosford Civic Theatre. So check out their website. Tickets are going very well, so you should do that soon if you want to come along. And thank you for listening.
And thank you to Chris Woff, or Woff, as we are calling him now.
Woff. Second mention, Woff.
You're very welcome. Yeah, well, let's see the first away game of the Yeisler era. Intrigued to see how Newcastle approach that and whether the uplifting events of this week, or last week and a half, I'd say, continue going into to the close of the deadline, and hopefully Newcastle do bring in at least one more attacker.
Hopefully. Thank you very much for joining us. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, I hope you have a good week. We shall speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye.
Next thrifting experience? Check out the new Goodwill Columbus location in Westerville. Our new store is full of the latest secondhand selections, with options rotating daily. From warm weather clothes to home decor, you may find your new favorite items just in time for spring. Each purchase helps us create opportunities throughout Central Ohio. It's shopping that looks good, feels good, and does good. Come shop at 60 East Schrock Road or learn more at goodwillcolumbus.org.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with: thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
L-E-T-E-N-E-T. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 100% match on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.